Hey everyone, welcome to Josh Nason's Punch Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. I am, of course, Josh Nason, writer, editor, and podcaster for the website. Hope you guys are having a great week, great month, great life. We're back, another edition of the show. Last week, or the last time we were on with you, we talked about The Athletic's launch in MMA, and this week we're talking about another media launch of sorts. Happened a couple months ago, but finally was able to catch up with him. Jeremy Botter of Wizard, also Bleacher Report as well. And Jeremy does not do a ton of these interviews, so I was happy to get his attention once again for our listening audience. So I was really intrigued by Wizard for a lot of reasons. One is it's pulling no punches when it comes to the type of stuff that's putting out content-wise, going very deep behind the scenes and being very honest based on Jeremy's... Actually, I don't even know how long he's been doing this, but a long time. Long time writing, doing features, and being involved in the sport. So on this talk, we talk a lot about what led into the launch of Wizard, why he wanted to do it, why he's not scared of any repercussions, all the good stuff. We just kind of talk about the MMA business in general and get nerdy with a lot of different things. Not exactly a preview of UC Greenville or anything like that or Bellator tonight, but yeah, this is a good conversation. If you enjoy the previous conversations with Jeremy, I think you'll like this. And also, if you like the one on The Athletic, I think you'll like this as well as we continue to kind of try to wade our way through how the internet continues to grow and how people that have followings and insights continue to deliver content to us. So I was really interested about that. So let's get right into it. You, me, Jeremy Botter of Wizard, and also Bleacher Report coming up right about now. Well, it took a little while to get here, my friends, but we are here. Our guest, a lot has happened since we last talked to him. He's a major political star. He is a star of stage and screen. He has written so many books and movies and things like that and all that. No, just kidding. But a lot of stuff has happened to our guest. Jeremy Botter is back. Jeremy of Wizard, once again, and not the wizard like a hat and a cane or a magic wand and a beard. Unless that's your look now. Is that kind of what's happening?
I mean, I feel like it. I feel old enough to be a wizard at this point, but no.
Well, you've been pretty busy. You've been pretty public about being involved with Beto O'Rourke. We were just talking about a little bit before we started recording, and that seems to be kind of wrapping up, as you mentioned, or at least this stage of it. And obviously Wizard we're going to talk about in a bit and doing some other stuff. You're going to be writing a book and about Conor McGregor and all that. But yeah, I think a lot of things have happened since we talked, last year or so, I think.
Yeah, I think it was last July, maybe. It's been a while, man.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, it feels like an eternity. God, last July, the last 3 months feel like an eternity, Josh, honestly.
Well, you know, when you're trying to avoid talking to me, I can see it feels like an eternity. You know what I mean?
You are relentless, though. I'll give you that much. It's a good thing, though. That's a good thing. I wouldn't have the energy to chase me down. Yeah, glad to be here. Glad to be back on the show.
I only have two restraining orders against me, if that helps.
Well, you might have a third. Let's see how this goes.
Excellent. So I want to start with this before we get into the Wizard stuff. And I wanted to talk to you about Wizard since it started. So this will be good and kind of reintroduce some people, the concept and everything. But what I would say, you've been busy with a bunch of stuff. What is your intake when it comes to MMA these days? And even, I guess, pro wrestling also as well, because I know that that's kind of more of a fun thing for you, but you do some work, some stories and stuff on that. But what is your combat sports intake look like these days?
Well, honestly, over the past few months, my intake has kind of been limited to the things that I am assigned to work on. For Bleacher Report, I do profiles on MMA and pro wrestling, and I've got a couple of stories in the works on both of those sports. And outside of that, man, like I just my intake on MMA, especially, like the only really, I mean, I'll turn something on if there's a show on. I say if there's a show on, there's always a show on. But if there's a card on and I have nothing else going on and I'm not assigned to write about it, I might turn it on just kind of as background noise. Or like if, let's say, Donald Cerrone's fighting, even if I'm not, there's certain fighters where even if I'm not assigned to write about it, I will always watch. I'm Donald Cerrone. I'm always going to watch, you know, I'll always watch the John Jones and Israel Adesanya is on that list now. But it's kind of a small list, man. Like, honestly, I've been doing this for so long that I've said this before. I'm not really an MMA fan anymore. I've kind of lost that a long time ago. Just kind of got burned out. What I'm interested in still, though, are unique stories, people with, you know, with human stories that haven't been told. And then I'm, you know, I mean, I'm just like the next guy. Like I guess I'm more of a casual fan now where there's people I'm going to go out of my way to see. And outside of that, everything else is kind of off my radar. I do a monthly column after each UFC pay-per-view on the main event. I'll keep doing that for the foreseeable future. Outside of that, I don't really make it a point to watch unless it's one of the people that I just really have to see fight, you know. I'll watch Bellator if they have something ridiculous happening, which sadly seems to be less and less of that lately. I'm kind of bummed that we don't have any more old people fighting each other. But maybe that's a good thing. And in terms of pro wrestling, man, like I'm doing a column, a pro wrestling column for Bleacher Report. It's kind of been on hiatus the past few months because of my work with Beto O'Rourke, just like everything else in my life. So when I was doing that each week, I was watching WWE, and it was kind of like I was watching it because I had to watch it. Kind of the same way I was with MMA back in the day. Like I watched it because I had to, even though it was absolutely fucking terrible, Josh. Like WWE is so bad for the most part. I mean, 98% of the stuff that I was watching was so bad. I went to WrestleMania. Not as a fan, but because I had a couple stories. I did a story on Becky Lynch and spent some time with her, and that was fun. She is a trip. That was a fun story to write. And then I also have another story it was supposed to come out the week after WrestleMania, but it's going to come out the week before SummerSlam, crossing my fingers, I believe, on what it takes from WWE's end to put a show like that together from a production perspective, from a manpower perspective. And I talked to tons of people that never get talked to. Kevin Dunn, Vince McMahon. I talked to a ton of people story.
And you talked to Kevin Dunn and Vince?
Yeah, sure did. Look at you. I talked to everybody.
Look at you.
Yeah, and it's a really cool story. I mean, it's kind of, if you're not interested in like production stuff, it may not be interesting to you. But like for me, it was super intriguing finding out what all, you know, how long, how many years out they start planning, when they start sending out requests for proposals, to each city that they think might be a potential WrestleMania host city. And I kind of talk about where WrestleMania, what cities it might be heading to in the future, and, you know, negotiations. And it's pretty fascinating stuff. It's very long. It might get boring. I'm sorry if you read it and you get bored. But for somebody like me, I'm always intrigued by that kind of thing.
I love that stuff.
That's the thing. It's like people like you, there's going to be people who are going to be interested in it. And if you're one of those people, it's got some fascinating details in it. And I've also got a story coming up that I'm working on the Performance Center. I'm spending time in Florida with, you know, Triple H and all the people that work down there. And that story probably won't come out until the fall. But outside of those stories, getting back to my point, outside of those stories, man, I stopped watching WWE when I stopped doing my column, because it's just fucking, you know, it's terrible. From a creative perspective, it's bad. Now I'm into AEW. I still like pro wrestling. I still watch New Japan, whenever I have time. I have a lot to catch up on there. But my consumption really has just kind of waned, number one, due to my schedule, and also number two, just because the product has not been very good. But I am going to be jumping back into that weekly column here shortly, either next week or the week after, which means I will have to start watching Raw and SmackDown again, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not good when entertainment feels like a chore, no matter what, if it's a movie, if it's a TV show. I mean, there's just so many different options now, you know, and my hope is that, my hope, and I think everyone's hope, is that, and I think the reason AEW is such a buzz among lapsed fans is because it feels fun and fresh, that they give a shit, and that there's a chance to maybe do the stuff that a lot of us like, which is logical and fun and entertaining to watch. And, you know, the hope is that that drives WWE to kind of get back to that. We'll have to see. Obviously, there's, you know, I think a lot of people are assuming that AEW is going to overtake WWE. I think that's, you know, that's a long ways off. But I think if they can drive them creatively and make something that's more entertaining for everyone, that's my hope with all of it, you know, because it's, I just, when I watch TV and watch stuff, I don't want it to be a chore. And that's the same thing with like so much UFC and so much Bellator and everything. Like, yeah, I still watch all the UFC shows, but it's like you watch it and you have to really look for points of interest. And there's so many fights, which are just fighter A versus B, no stakes. And it's like, cool, that means absolutely nothing, right? You know?
Right. Yeah. And that's the thing is like, I mean, I've been covering MMA for 12 years, you know, like it's, and I mean, up until probably 5 years ago, like I would watch every show and I would know a lot of the people that were fighting. There'd be people I didn't know, but I would go out and I would research them and I would watch their old fights. And like, man, when the thing I love about my job has always been, I'm doing something that I love. I'm writing about something that I love. But then there was a time, man, like, I mean, when they just started expanding and having one show a weekend, two shows a weekend, every single week, like it became a chore, you know? And I know people are going to be sitting out there complaining and like, look, I get that my job is, I am fortunate. I am fortunate to have been able to do what I do for so long. I'm grateful. But it's some, you know, anything that you do that is a job is eventually, I guess, going to feel like a job. And that makes it less interesting from a fan perspective. Now I'm no less invested in it from a, you know, I still do the best job I can on my profiles and on my features and on my call. You know, I still do the best job I can, but I just don't have the same enthusiasm. Like I don't get excited to watch most of the time. Now, there are still fight cards. I'm excited for that John Jones, you know, the July card. But I don't wake up on a rant. I didn't even know there was a card tomorrow until today, like this morning. Yeah. I had no idea. Yeah. And that's the thing. It's like, there's just so much. And it's just, you know, you grow up, I got married. When I was single, it was a lot easier to keep up with all this stuff. But you just get, overwhelmed by how much content they're putting out. And that's not just, you know, I mean, all the TV shows are overwhelming. And now we've got Dana White's Contender Series, which I've never seen a single episode of because it's just too much, you know? And again, though, let me say one more time, I'm fortunate to get to cover MMA and pro wrestling for a living. I love that I'm able to do that. But you have to have balance just like you do in any other job, any other subject.
Yeah. And for people that are like that think that way, that, you know, how can someone complain? Look, I guarantee you that Mike Trout does not like to play 162 baseball games a year. There are days when he's just like, ugh. You know, it's just that's how life is. And no matter what your business and no matter how much money you make, everyone gets to a point where they're going to have the days that are like, I don't feel like doing this today, because they're human beings. That's what it's, I mean, and what you want people at their freshest. And so it goes to a much deeper conversation about time off and all this stuff. But it's good to get time away from it. It refreshes your mind. Is. Yeah,
it is. And the thing is like, you know, people have asked me when I've talked about this before, people have asked me like, you know, there'll be a night when there's a fight card and I'm not tweeting or I'm not talking about it. And they're like, why aren't you watching, man? Like, aren't you a fan? I'm like, no, I'm not. This is my job. And like, when I'm off of work, I don't want to do my job for fun, like for free. You know, I mean, it's like anybody who has a job, just any person in the world, like you go to your job 9 to 5, whatever, you know, whatever hours you work. You don't go home and then like take one day out of your weekend to do it just because you liked it. Like it a job is a job and your personal life is your personal life. And like, there has to be separation. I was getting burnt out. I mean, I did get burnt out. And I just, there had to be some separation. I don't have to watch every single UFC, Bellator, ONE FC fight card. I don't, you know, I can still tell the stories that I'm paid to tell without doing all that stuff. And when I am telling stories, when I am doing my column, I will do my research. I'll put in the hours and the work, but like, I'm not gonna, there's other things I want to do. You know, yeah. MMA is not my life. Pro wrestling is not my life. I have loved both of them. I still love pro wrestling at its base. You know, I'm not saying I love WWE right now, but like, AEW, I mentioned AEW. I am genuinely enthused, and I can't wait for the next couple of AEW shows, and I can't wait for that television show. Number one, because as you said, yeah, it should drive WWE and Vince McMahon to do better. But the truth, Josh, is you know that WWE's not really going to get better until Vince McMahon is not running it anymore. I think we've kind of realized that, because after all the complaints about the process, the creative process over the years, there's been no changes. He's just set in his ways, and it's not going to change. I was talking to my cousin yesterday who has been a WWE watcher for years. He didn't watch WCW. He doesn't watch any indie stuff, doesn't watch New Japan. He is excited about AEW, and he said the reason he's excited is because WWE is making him excited for AEW. Because it's so bad, and this is a casual fan, you know, and if it's having that effect on people like him who devote a minimal amount of time to watching wrestling and will turn it off if it sucks, like, I think they've got something. That Dustin Rhodes, Cody Rhodes match, like, that dude, I'm not saying it was the best match I've seen in years, but it was easily the match that connected with me emotionally more than any I've seen in years and years and years. Maybe decades, dude, like that. I love that match, and the more things they can do like that, the more people like me are going to come around and be attached to that product. And I think, honestly, I think it's not just because of Cody and the Bucks and Kenny and those guys. I think Tony Khan really is the driving force. Dude, you want to hear something weird? I traded tapes with Tony Khan's in the 90s, dude. I still have a couple of the tapes that I got from him.
Oh, God.
Which is wild. Yeah. It's, you know, and so he's one of us, or at least he's one of what I guess I used to be, which was obsessive and watched everything. Mm-hmm. And you know, all it takes is one company like that to really turn somebody's fandom around. So, I mean, the UFC could win me back in a heartbeat if they didn't have so much product, if it wasn't such a all consuming choice to have to follow their product, you know, they could win me back, and WWE can still do that. Again, I don't think they can with Vince in charge. But I do think there is a day that will come when they are good again. It's not right now.
That's what frustrates me so much about Bellator, is they're just falling into the same trap of like, let's do a bunch of shows. And it's just like, Jesus, you do one show a month, load up your cards and give time to breathe between. Right.
Yeah,
I mean, they have these shows like headlined by guys like what at the Windstar Casino in Thackerville, Oklahoma. It's like, come on.
And that's the thing. I've talked to people that I know at Bellator, and I'm like, dude, you guys are not, like, they're trying to be the UFC now, you know, like they're doing this legitimate sporting thing. And that's not what attracted me to Bellator. What attracted me to Bellator was the weird shit, like Royce Gracie versus Ken Shamrock. Kimbo's dude. It sounds terrible now because one of them died during the fight and then the other died like a month or two later, but like Kimbo Slice and Tata 5000, I set cage side for that fight with Luke Thomas and with Jonathan Snowden, and I have never had more fun watching a fight. Now, it was horrible, but it was different, right? And it was entertaining in a weird way. But like, that's what Bellator, that's what they used. I mean, I used to be obsessed with Bellator because of just the weird shit. And Scott Coker, I don't know why. I don't know if it's pressure from above, but like, they're kind of just turning into UFC light, right? And then, to be frank, man, the Pro Fighters League is way more interesting than Bellator right now, to me.
Huh.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, like, because that tournament, legitimately, the rules of that tournament in the early rounds where, you know, you score more points if you get a finish, like, that leads to better fights. I think UFC and Bellator could both take some lessons from what they're doing there.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see what happens with Bellator. I mean, I think the thing as we talk, so they're having a show in London, I think tonight or tomorrow. And
yeah,
so
see, I had no idea.
So get this. So they have this deal with DAZN. So you can watch part of the show, which is Bellator, I think 223 or 224 or something like that. You can watch it tape delayed on DAZN and Paramount Network, right? Then they have four fights after the fact, which you can only watch on the Bellator app. And one of those fights is Gegard Mousasi defending his middleweight title against, I think it's a Rafael Lovato Jr. or something like that.
Wait, are you saying that is not on DAZN? Like that is...
No. No.
What the fuck?
Because it's for... It's for the Sky UK television audience. So I'm like, the only way I can see the title fight is through the Bellator app and not through your streaming partner. And they're like, yeah.
Oh, dude, I've got to ask about that. That is ludicrous. That is ludicrous.
I asked. I did ask, and they gave me. I mean, I got an answer that, you know, it's not ideal, but it's essentially for this. It's for the UK TV audience, but it's just very odd though. It just doesn't make.
Let's target a minuscule audience. To the exception of the rest of the world. And Josh, when I say I'm going to ask about it, what I mean is I'm going to make fun of them personally, directly. That's what I mean. Like, I'm not,
that sounds good.
I believe you. Yeah, I believe you. Good. But I'm going to mock them for that. That is ridiculous.
So, let's talk about Wizard. So in, I think it was March or April, give or take. We'll go back even like a year ago. You started this. We're going to start this thing called Wizard, which I don't think you really, you may have had kind of a vision for then, but it didn't really like take off or do anything. And then a few months ago, all of a sudden we found out this launch and now it's going to be a paid subscription newsletter. And you started to come out the box swinging and people are like, holy shit, this is pretty interesting stuff. So, I'll kind of give the overview that Wizard is it's a subscription, I call it a subscription newsletter, but obviously you get access to, everything's hosted on this website as well at Substack. And it was you, so far just you doing columns and basically, you know, there's no fear of reprisals, no fear of anything. You're just like, these are the stories I'm going to tell and we're going to be honest about what's going on behind the scenes and away we go. Is that a good explanation? I'm sure you can do a better one.
Yeah, that's a good explanation. And, you know, when I first, I've been toying around with it because I love the domain name. Obviously, it's, you know, it's a reference to the wrestling move Wizard, which Mike Goldberg always calls everything a wizard. I thought that was funny. And so I kind of went with it. And my, you know, my initial idea was, okay, I'll write about pro wrestling and I'll write about MMA. And I just got busy and was kind of disheartened with the platform because I had hosted it on Medium. I was kind of disheartened with the tools that they had and I wasn't really getting any kind of interaction. And so I put it on the back burner. And then earlier this year, I started looking at Substack and, you know, cause some writers that I really enjoy that do political columns have you know, started doing their own stuff on there. And so I started taking a look at it and I started talking to the folks behind Substack and, you know, decided this might be the thing that I do. And this might be the way to go, like the publishing platform, take it, you know, make it an email newsletter because I had toyed with the idea of doing an email newsletter back, you know, a year ago. I was writing so many things. I had so many assignments going on at the same time that it was tough to devote any kind of time to it. And again, I didn't get the traction from that. I think you know all about email publishing and how, you know, deliverables and stuff like that. It's hard if you don't have a good platform. It's hard to get in people's inbox and get some attention. And so but when I started talking to the guys from Substack, I was like, okay, this might work. You know, I'm going to test it out. Essentially, when I launched this thing, it was a test to see what kind of visibility I could get. And I knew that I couldn't just do what I do for Bleacher Report and other places and make that an email newsletter. It had to be something different. If I was going to charge people, if I was going to ask them to devote time while they're going through their email to clicking on my, you know, on my email subject line and open it up and read it, however many times a week or month I publish stuff, I knew it was going to have to be something different. And honestly, there's not a lot that you can do different in media, right? Because everything's kind of been done. And I was sick of going out to, you know, every major MMA site and seeing the same fucking headline every week, right? Like 10 reasons to watch UFC 9020. You see the same headlines on every single site. I get why they do it. I understand that. Like I'm not bashing that. You have to pay the bills. That's what pays the bills. That's why everybody does it. There's a reason why that kind of content exists. It's because it's what drives traffic. Traffic is what pays the bills. It's just the economics of media in 2019. But I wanted to do something different. And so I started looking and I started thinking and I started kind of imagining what I would like to do in a perfect world where I didn't have to worry about, you know, reprisals from the UFC's PR team or Dana White. But here's the thing. It's like, I don't have to worry about any of that because I don't care about credentials. Like, I don't ever want to go to another UFC show again. I've been to over 100 UFC shows for work. I don't ever want to go again. Like, it's not my thing. And so they can't hurt me. They can't hurt me through Bleacher Report either. So I kind of, it frees me up to write what I want to write. And if I'm going to write what I want to write, then I'm going to be honest about the things that I see that everybody in the media sees, but that nobody reports because they don't want to lose their access, because right. losing their access can lead to losing their job. And I get that. Again, I'm not bashing that. I did that for years. I've been cozy with the UFC. I've been cozy with Dana White. And I've written about that, you know, but I don't have to do that anymore. And I don't want to. And so I started just writing what I know to be the truth. And man, like, I was really surprised with the instant feedback and the subscription level, you know, subscriber count and the feedback that I got from other people in media who were saying, hey, like, this is the stuff that I wish I could write. It's different. It's unique. And it really resonated with a lot of people, a lot more people than I thought it was going to resonate with. And so, yeah, I mean, it's been exciting. Now, I've kind of had it on the back burner for the past month because of my work with Beto O'Rourke. Tomorrow, it comes back in full force. I've got a couple of things that I'm working on that subscribers will get over the next couple of days. But it's just, it's freeing to be able to, I know people aren't used to paying for MMA content. I think that will change with the launch of The Athletic and with what I'm doing, honestly, because The Athletic is doing, we can talk about that if you want to in a little bit, but that, you know, what they are doing is spectacular. People are not used to paying for MMA content, but the kind of MMA content that they are producing and that I am hoping to produce is not the kind of MMA content that you get for free everywhere else, because the people that do this kind of writing are not afforded the opportunity. I mean, Sean Al-Shaadi is one of the best writers in sports, not just mixed martial arts, in sports. He is a phenomenal writer, and he hadn't done a long story in over 2 years until he turned his in yesterday to get published here in the coming, you know, upcoming weeks. And that's, he hadn't done that. He hadn't published anything in a couple of years because he gets assigned all these other stories, fight reactions. Here's what the fighters said on Twitter about this fight. You know, like, that's what he's had to do. And dude, I mean, I haven't listened to, I think, didn't you have him on your show? I don't know if.
Yeah. He and Dan, a couple of weeks ago, we did kind of inside the launch of The Athletic. Yeah.
Yeah. And I didn't know if he talked to you about it, but like, I mean, I talked to him a lot, and it's soul crushing to do that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah. You're getting paid, but like, that's not why any of us got into writing. We got into writing to do the content that we love, that we can really sink our teeth into. And that's what Wizard, you know, gives me the opportunity to do, is to write what I want to write without worrying about, you know, being banned. I don't give a shit about any of that stuff. You know, I get to write what I want and tell the truth, and hopefully it resonates with people.
Yeah. There was two that I think really set the tone for what people, could expect. And I think probably what you want them to expect going forward, which was the, UFC and ESPN, A Marriage Made in Heaven. And then also the, this one right here, scrolling through, this is, it's what we like, people like to hear. You don't need media credentials. Some of what you were just referring to before and all that. And I think, I think what I enjoyed about it was, you're right, it was different, and it's really tough to be different in this era, because for many of the reasons that you just laid out, and that everyone, you know, there's not a lot of new avenues to be different unless you want to get really kind of dorky inside the sport, like technique breakdowns and some of that stuff. But honestly, I think that hits a certain audience. You know, people want to know what's going on and all this, but this is kind of an interesting, like, because, and I think it works because you've been doing this for so long. If you had just been some geek off the street that has been doing, you know, went to one show and people, sounds like, oh, I'm going to tell it like it is. And I'm like, well, who the fuck are you? Right. But the fact that you've done this for so long, you've done this for several different media outlets, you've been to 100 shows, but you've interviewed people. I mean, you have stories, and people, that's what people want to know, is stories. And they want to know, okay, this person actually, they may not agree with stuff, but at least that they know it's coming from a place in which you've been there, done that, and continue to do that. But you also don't care about certain aspects of doing it, if that makes sense. And that to me, that was what was refreshing. And it came through like, and maybe this, because you had said this in the writing before, it just kind of felt like you're free, you know, that the restraints kind of just lifted off the shoulders, and you're like, I just want to just tell story. I just want to tell these stories, and they're interesting. And yeah, people definitely responded from what you were saying, as far as subscriber wise and all that stuff. I mean, people really got into it and backed you right away.
Yeah. And it was really surprising, and it's been, you know, it's been a real blessing. And you know, I've missed it over the past month while I've been over here writing out policy, working on politics and stuff, and I'm excited to get back to it. I've been writing over the past couple of days, here and there as I had time, as you know, I haven't had much time, but I'm excited to get the ball rolling again tomorrow morning because it is different, and because I'm not writing the same old thing that I've written for years and years and years. I'm getting to write. This is the kind of stuff, the stuff that I'm writing is not like, is foreign in MMA, right? But it's not in other sports. Or in other niches. Like this kind of reporting and this kind of writing happens all the time, and we've never had it because, you know, everybody lives in fear of this big bad bald dude that has their career in his hands. But, you know, and look, if you're a young kid like who's fortunate enough to get, you know, get work at, you know, an outlet like Bloody Elbow or some, you know, MMA fighting, because they're dying for talent over there now. You know, if you're one of those people who get that opportunity to go and work there, and you're trying to make your mark in the sport, I get why you kind of shy away from this stuff. For one thing, because you haven't really lived it, and for two, because you're not trying to rock the boat. You're just trying to collect a paycheck. You're trying to gain your footing. And I'm not worried about any of that stuff. You know, I've got a 2-year contract at Bleacher Report. I'm in no fear of losing my job because of something that makes the UFC mad. You know, and since I launched this thing, I've made the UFC mad several times, and I know that because I have quite a few subscribers in that office over there, which has been fun to watch.
That's one of the things I was going to ask you about. You mentioned that especially early on, you saw a lot of UFC addresses or people that you knew. One things that I think makes great writing, is when you have a visual in your head. One of the visuals that I have in my head right now is you're talking about Dana White's back office, I think. The one where where he was, you know, basically just scrolling, looking at, where he had like a really old shitty computer, I think. And kind of going through clips and that he also every morning would get a pile of, clips and things like this. Just what people are saying about the UFC and all this stuff. And this is, you know, for a guy that does not, you know, he basically shits on the media every chance he gets. He's been doing a lot more lately, what I think is interesting. But in the way that he's doing it, because he keeps saying the same two or three things over and over and over again. But for a guy who doesn't care, that he does care. So these visuals kind of like, oh, there's someone that kind of knows some stuff, actually, you know, speaking the truth. We're not really used to that. How are we going to handle it? So I can see that people would be interested over there, because I'm sure, from what I understand, a lot of people don't really care for him that much either.
Yeah, no. I mean, there are people in that company that do love working for him, but they are usually people of the same kind of mindset. It's funny, like how should I put this? Okay, so over the years, I've seen a lot of different sides of Dana White, right? Like I've written about it, how I used to go out with him all the time. I've written about that on Wizard. I've been close with Dana. I've been close with Dana White. I've worked for an outlet that was a publishing partner of the UFC. When I worked for Heavy MMA, you know, we were essentially a PR arm of the UFC, and I did it for the same reason that, like I said, you know, everybody, young people today, you know, just keep their mouth shut and write what they're told and not try to rock the boat. That's what I did back in 2010, 2011, 2012. Like I was just trying to keep my footing. I had a full-time job and I was trying to keep it. But I've been across all spectrums in this thing, man. Like I've been on the outside, like I am now, which is really kind of the place to be. I've been on the inside. And it gives you kind of a unique perspective on how he operates. And for all the shit talking that he does about the media, dude, like, do you know any other head of a big sports company like the UFC that will text a media guy, you know, text somebody in the media call somebody in the media. Like, dude, if Kevin Ioli writes something that he doesn't like, Kevin Ioli would get a call from Dana White within 5 or 10 minutes of that thing publishing. How do you think that happens? Like, it's because they are obsessed with the media at the UFC. Like, for as many times as they proclaim to not care, to think we're all full of shit, they desperately care for our approval. Just like, I mean, that's how it is with pretty much anybody who's in the limelight, you know. But like, they pretend a lot more, they pretend that they don't care a lot more than people usually would, right? And you know, you mentioned, like, I wrote about the PR packet, the media packet, the clips that he gets each morning, man. Like, that's been going on for a decade. Like, every morning he gets a packet of stories print out, because I guess the internet's too hard for him to use himself. but like, that still happens. Like, that is a morning briefing. He gets, like, it's like his own president's daily brief of stories. And I would always know when I was featured in that stack of papers, because I would get a call or I would get a text, you know, sometimes cursing me out, sometimes, you know, trying to explain different positions that he was taking that he thought that I had wrong. Sometimes he was reasonable, sometimes he was not. These days, I mean, I haven't talked to the guy since I wrote on Wizard, I think, in my first post, that how he texted my wife and told her to blow me. And, you know, called me all sorts of names and stuff. I haven't talked to him since then. That was over a year and a half ago. Just looking for, so, you know, I'm not saying I have any kind of personal connection with him now, but, and so looking from the outside where I'm at right now, like, it seems like he's a little bit more unhinged. And for a company that's about to go public for Endeavor, it seems really weird that a guy like that would be in charge. But then, you know, you got to, Ari Emanuel is the same kind of person. And so, hey, Patrick Whitesell, same kind of person, a little bit dialed back. Dana White's more public, but they're the same kind of people. And so I every time that I think that he's on his way out, that he's too unhinged to be the public face of a company like this, that somebody like Brian Stann or Daniel Cormier or anybody else would be a better choice for the public face of that company, like, he goes and signs a new 10-year deal. You know, like, I've been wrong many, many times about Dana White's state of affairs and where his head's at these days. But I agree. I do. I mean, he is, from what I have seen lately, he seems to be becoming more and more unhinged. And I don't know why that is. I don't know if the pressure is getting to him, but yeah, it kind of looks that way.
There's a few lines that he has said, as I alluded to, that over the past, I've noticed, like, 6 months or so. I can't remember what the one that he said, The media knows, like, media knows, like, absolutely nothing about what's going on. He mentioned that a couple times, but a little bit more, like, he's using the same exact phrasing. And he said, what is the one that he's used a lot? That when is everyone going to give me credit there that I know what I'm doing? He's mentioned that same phrase in 3 different interviews that I've seen him do, because he doesn't do a lot of them. It was around, what the hell was he doing? He did, like, the interview, that sit down with Megan O'Leary, and he did something else. I can't remember what announcement it was. Maybe because the ESPN pay-per-view deal or something like that, the ESPN one. But it was just so interesting that, to me, that something happened over the last year or so that got to him, that he's got this, like, this thing that people need to start giving him credit for what he's done, stop doubting him. But before, he didn't really care, because the thing I've noticed that's changed with him a lot is that in the early days, it felt like, and this is going to sound weird, but, like, we're all on the same side in terms of wanting interesting fights. We love what we were seeing. And, you know, he would get seemingly swayed by public sentiment in terms of making fights. I mean, there was certain fights he's like, this is going to be a main event. People didn't really seem to get into it, so I changed it. And people are like, yeah, that's so awesome. And, you know, he's the anti-Roger Goodell. And we felt like we're all on the same team, even though, you know, media and promoters and folks as the stories aren't supposed to be on the same team, but I think you kind of get what I'm talking about, that we're all in it. And somewhere along the way, it's just like, you know, I think we're good. I got it from here. And, you know, fans and me were kind of like, okay. And they started getting a little bit more pissed. And something seems to have got to him over the last year and a half. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's a stripping of power or something like that, but he's definitely more in this phase of, like, I know what I'm doing, and, you know, when are people finally going to start understanding that I know what I'm doing?
Yeah, I think there's probably, I mean, you know, just from my own perspective, I think there's probably 2 things. I think number one is he the old meme about if Dana says something, then it, you know, the opposite is happening. I think he's seen a lot of that over the past year and a half. You know, it's his own fault, really. Like, I mean, it's not really a meme if it's true, right? Like, that's kind of, it's kind of become the thing. Like, yeah. If he says something's happening, then I don't believe it's happening, you know, because he's lied, you know, straight to the camera, straight to our faces so many times that he can't be surprised when nobody trusts him. And then number two is, I think after the sale, like, a lot of people gave a lot of credit to Lorenzo Fertitta, and not so much to Frank Fertitta, but to the Fertittas, mm-hmm. for building the UFC up into what it was. And I kind of wonder if Dana is kind of feeling slighted, like, you know, maybe he feels like he's not getting as much credit for that rise as he should. And look, Josh, I mean, like, he's a buffoon now, like, he's a total buffoon now. But to say that Dana White is not heavily responsible for the rise of mixed martial arts, you know, in modern day, is complete bullshit. Nobody can say that with a straight face. Right. He is. He's a buffoon. He's an asshole, whatever now. But, like, dude, I will still give him credit. Without Dana White being what he was, you know, back when they bought the company, the UFC's not where it is today. The UFC's probably, out, you know, get sold to Dan Lambert and out of business. Like, I mean, or get sold to Vince McMahon or whoever. And is out, you know, and is out of business. And who knows what the sport would look like. The sport would not be where it is right now without Dana White.
Right.
You know, that could, the thing is, though, is like, that can be true while also being true that he's a total asshole today and is more detrimental to the sport than the positives that he brings. Mm. So I'm wondering if that kind of gets to him, because it seems kind of obvious to me, like, just from stuff that I've read, that that's kind of the sentiment, you know?
So we talked about The Athletic. You broke that story that the MMA or that Athletic was bringing on an MMA vertical, and the names that you had, you didn't announce at the time, but you know, you had mentioned that there were some, and they all turned out to be joining The Athletic, and now they have this, you know, this power team there. And you alluded to earlier, we talked about Dan and Sean. So I was kind of like, you know, that in around that whole time, a lot of things shifted. Obviously, you know, Ariel's with ESPN, Mark Raimondi going to ESPN, you know, MMA fighting, they got Damon Martin, and I think they elevated some of the other guys within, but there was a, you know, there's a lot of, like, kind of shifts around in the media scape, and it's really interesting in kind of like hearing what is going on with, like, how they kind of get tired of doing the whole runaround of you know, you go to a media day and you try to get this quote and this poll quote and do this, but it just seems it's so formulaic now. And kind of like, as you consume MMA media, and we talked about Wizard is different, like, how and what do you consume, and what's kind of caught your eye, or, you know, what's your feeling about what's going on right there as far as how people cover the sport now?
Well, so, you know, that really the two things that I read, I make a point to read now, are The Athletic, obviously, because several of those guys, outside of being friends of mine, are some of my favorite writers. Sean's one of my favorite writers. Chuck's one of my favorite. Ben, Chad Dundas, who I think it's ludicrous that he's not, you know, a bigger presence than he is. He's a fucking incredible writer. I subscribe to that. I was a subscriber to The Athletic before all this happened. I'll continue subscribing forever. They've got a phenomenal team already. And then I read ESPN because, honestly, dude, like, what else do you need at this point in terms [S2] Right. [S1] Of MMA? Like, who else is breaking news? Nobody. I mean, the news gets broken by Brett Okamoto or Ariel. They have Mark Raimondi, you know, doing the insanely hard work that Mark Raimondi does. That guy never sleeps. He might work more than John Morgan, which is, I never thought I would say that about anybody, or Dave Meltzer. I mean, like, those guys, you know, they have a seemingly limitless capacity for work. Outside of that, like, I don't really read a lot. I don't really read much else, man. Cause, like, my time is kind of limited. I don't want to get overwhelmed with information and with data and with, you know, numbers and previews and all this stuff. Like, I make a point to read the stuff that I know is going to be good. It's going to be informative. And so, I mean, outside of ESPN and outside of, I read Dave's newsletter every week, beginning to end. That takes about 19 hours for me, which is incredible.
In a magnifying glass.
Yeah. I read that every single week. I read ESPN. I don't read every single story that they put out, but like I read, you know, I'll read a lot of stuff there, and I read all the stories from The Athletic because I'm learning. I'm learning new things from The Athletic. I am not only am I learning new things, but I'm reading stories that you're not going to find anywhere else. Stories about humanity, personal things that you just, it's just not, those kind of stories are just not told in the sport enough. Those are the kind of stories that I want to tell. And so I read them not only, you know, because I like to read those kind of stories, but also because like, dude, the guys who write as well as guys who write like that can teach anybody who wants to write like that. And I still, like, I've been doing this for so long. And every time I read one of those stories, every time I read something that Dan has edited, I realize just how far I have to go to be the writer that I want to be, right? So it's kind of humbling. But outside of those, man, like, there's still times where Bloody Elbow will publish something with a really catchy headline that I just have to click. And then I'm almost always disappointed with what I read. There's still headlines that people get me with, like, oh, you got me. But yeah, I mean, that's pretty my main sources: ESPN, Athletic, Dave's newsletter, and in terms of wrestling sites, man, like I actually, you know what? Let me add Fightful to that list too. Those guys, Sean Ross Sapp, those guys have done a remarkable job over the past year and a half, at least of getting onto my plate. Like I read a lot more of their stuff than I ever thought I would. I've been real impressed by their hustle, both in pro wrestling and in MMA. So yeah, I would add them to that list too.
I'm going to have to edit that whole thing out because they're a major rival of ours and they're absolute piece of, no, just kidding. Just kidding. No, Sean, I hope to talk to him at some point too. I'm very interested in, kind of how they've gone about things, but yeah, they're owned by some company I had never heard of before. And they've done a pretty good job just kind of amassing it's good. I think it's a good, like,
it's the hustle, man. It's the hustle. Like that's how they've done it. Like, dude, I don't know. I don't think Sean ever sleeps. I don't think any of those guys ever sleep. Like he is always working. If there's a story that comes out in MMA, he has got something within 10 minutes always.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of thing that I used to do. I know what that's like. I would caution him to take a vacation every once in a while, mm-hmm. And to take a step back, but like, dude, he's hustling, you know. Can't blame him for hustling.
Yeah, I wonder, I'm very interested to see how this is getting really geeky inside media. I'm interested to see what how Luke Thomas's next year is, because now that he's got a kid, coming from someone that has a 2-year-old and has lived this, you know, in trying to balance a couple different jobs, and it's not easy. It's not easy.
Yeah.
And I just want, because he's got the radio show and he's got the MMA fighting stuff, I wonder. I think his passion, I think he's mentioned before, seems to really be in the radio stuff, but I think he's one of the few, I think there's like a small handful, and I mean a small handful of people that could go subscription only. Yeah. I think he's one of them because he's built up such a thing on YouTube. I think there's something there. If he, you know, there's some other areas that he could do that he could potentially make a living on it. But I'm interested to see what happens there, because, you know, the MMA fighting team has really got decimated over the last, you know, 6 months, 6 to 8 months.
Yeah.
And I'm really interested to see from a media perspective where he's at in the next, you know, in the next year.
Well, I'll tell you, I've talked to Luke a couple of times because I agree with you. I think that he's one of the few that could do a subscribe. You know, I honestly, you know, all cards on the table. I've been trying to convince him to do a newsletter on Substack pretty mm-hmm. much since I started, because yeah. I think it would work for him. But I, you know, in conversations that I've had with him, I think you're going to see him focus more on his YouTube channel because that seems to be paying off for him more than anything else he does. Mm-hmm. So I think you're going to see him kind of expand that a little bit, which honestly, man, like Luke is one of the most, he's probably the smartest person in MMA, or at least the smartest person I've ever met. He's got a great presence on camera. He's a great radio voice. He speaks eloquently, uses a lot of words sometimes that I don't understand. Mm-hmm. He is a guy who, I don't want to say he's too big for MMA, right? But he's like a guy who seems like he's kind of slumming it in MMA. Like it seems like he's a guy who could do anything in any kind of topic, anything he wants to cover. And so, yeah, I agree. I think that he is one of the few that, I think you're going to see him focusing more on his own stuff and less on the stuff that happens at MMA fighting. So, mm-hmm.
So a few more things. Conor McGregor book. You're writing a book about the Irish star. And yeah, tell us a little bit about that. You know, put a post out on Wizard, which people can read, but kind of give us a little bit of insight. What's going on there?
Well, all I can tell you is the title is called The Rise and Fall of Conor McGregor. It'll be out, I believe, in 2020 at some point, not sure when. I am writing it. Writing a book is way harder than I thought it would be. But I am making significant progress, and, you know, I'll meet my deadline. And that's about all I can say about it right now.
That's embarrassing. You listen, you're on the number one podcast in all of Singapore right now, and that's all you can tell me about this content. No, that's good.
That's all I can say right now. Yeah.
So, well, let me ask you this though. So you've been doing all these other things are happening. Were you hesitant at all about potentially taking on a project like this? Cause you've never written a book before. This is number one, right?
Yeah, this is number one. And you know what? No, I wasn't hesitant, which surprises me in hindsight. Cause like, I mean, I've been approached to write a book for books, you know, for years, and I've always said no. And there's no other book that I would write that I would have agreed to write than one about Conor McGregor. And that's because I have done a lot of reporting on Conor McGregor. I mean, over the years, I've gone to Ireland. I've spent time with his family in their home. I've reported a lot of news on Conor McGregor over the years. I think that I've been in a position to tell a story that's maybe a little bit more nuanced and detailed with a little bit more behind the scenes stuff than people have read so far. Which, you know, I am not doing this with any participation from Conor McGregor. And in fact, I probably will expect some pushback at some point, but you know, I don't think Conor's entire story has been told. I think that there's a lot of media that reports on him, but I think a lot of media are complicit and not telling the whole truth. And I think that's changing now, obviously after the New York Times reported on his, sexual assault allegations in Dublin. I think that's changing a little bit, but mm-hmm. I think there's still a lot more that needs to be told. Dude, there's a lot of stuff that I have from the multiple stories that I've done on him that didn't make my final stories back then that are making this book. If I didn't have all the experience and all the history that I have with him and with the people around him and with his family, I would never have agreed to do this. But I thought it would be a good thing for me, an easy thing for me to tell a compelling story about a guy people care about, a controversial guy, you know, and yeah, like if it was somebody else that I was having to start from scratch with, I would never have done it because writing a book is hard. I feel like I haven't written this many words in my entire career and I'm writing them all for one project. But at the same time, it's been pretty fulfilling. I think the book is going to be good, I hope. I'm kind of at a point right now where I've been working on it for a few months and I am not sure if it's any good. So I've kind of set it aside for a couple of weeks so I can go back to it and keep working, man. But yeah, I don't know when it's going to be published. I think it's going to be next year sometime, probably the next summer, next fall. And I hope everybody reads it when it comes out. Mm. And by that, I mean buys it.
That's right. That's right. Put some money in your pocket.
Please.
So speaking of that, we'll round the bend with this then. Tell people, you always like when reporters say, tell me about this or talk to me about this. So I'm going to say, talk to me or tell the people why they should subscribe to Wizard, how they do it, social media, all that stuff. You said you're essentially, I don't want to say a relaunch, but a refreshing of sorts. You're back on Saturday the 22nd with some stuff and going full out. So tell people why they should subscribe and check it out if they haven't already.
Well, what I can tell you is, I'm not going to try to convince people to subscribe. What I would say is go have a look at the stories on there that are free because I do publish a lot of free stuff. That's kind of key. As weird as it sounds, that's kind of key to a paid newsletter is publishing good free content. I did not believe that was true. The guys from Substack told me that was true and I did not believe them. And then it turns out they were right because people really don't subscribe to this kind of thing because they want to read stuff behind the paywall. People subscribe to this because they want to support what you're doing, because they like what you're doing. And so, publishing free stuff kind of helps with that. So I would say to people who maybe are on the fence or who have not heard of it or whatever, I would say go to wizard.com, go look at the free stories. If you like what you see and you want to support more of those kind of stories, then subscribe. That's what I would say.
W-I-
pitch there, right?
That's good. That's good. WIZZERED.com.
W-H-I.
Oh, look at me. I can't spell today. WIZZERED.com. Obviously, you can go to Jeremy Botter's Twitter account, which is back. Yeah, I know you said you were leaving it, and then you decided to come back.
I was gone for like 4 months, and then I was told by people above me at one of my places of employment that it would be beneficial for my career if I were to get back on and start promoting the stuff that I was writing.
I see.
So I didn't really have a choice. But you'll notice, I mean, I'm not really that active on there. Like I do kind of use it to browse the news and stuff, but I'm not really as active as I used to be. It's better for my mental health if I'm not.
That's very true. Twitter is the absolute worst.
It's the worst.
It's
absolutely the downfall of humanity, that and Facebook.
I would agree with that. Well, good. So those two things, obviously people can read your work on Bleacher Report, and also, that's good. Also, I will point out, and I don't know what the easiest way is for people to find it or Google it, but you did, I told you this, that the military story you did, it wasn't for Memorial Day. The one you did a few months ago that you put out, I believe, on your own personal Substack. What was the name of that?
No, it's not on Substack. It's on Medium. You can just go to like medium.com and search for Jeremy Botter and click on my name and you'll see the stories that come up. Yeah, those are the stories that don't have anything to do with MMA or pro wrestling. And I got, you know, just kind of personal stuff. You can find them there.
Yeah, the military one, and I'm blanking on what the name of it was, but it is it was you were the first soldier to blog from war. That one. That was as compelling a read as I've read in a long time. That was really, really good. I'm just telling you that. It was fucking great. So definitely no matter where you're just read the story. Just read the story. It's really good. And obviously all the stuff on Wizard as well. So yeah, so looking forward to what's happened this week, the book coming out and all that stuff. And yeah, happy to track you down again.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me on. It'll be good the next time I come on in 2 years or whatever.
Jeremy Botter, everyone. Jeremy Botter. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, man.
All right. Big thanks, Jeremy Botter, for stopping by. Obviously, you can follow him on Twitter and Wizard at Twitter. And yeah, if you decide to check that out, you know, let me know what you think. And obviously, let Jeremy know what you think. As he mentioned, he's kind of getting back into things this week. He was doing He was doing some veterans policy work for Democratic presidential candidate Beto O'Rourke. And so that was been taking up a lot of his time. So now he's getting back into the Wizard swing of things as well. Some BR stuff as he talked about. So yeah, you know, you can check out some of the free content on that Wizard page and to see if that's the type of stuff that you're into. I find it interesting, and some of the other subscriber stuff I thought's good. And, you know, this is a venture which a lot of people have said that they're interested in and are voting with their dollars. So now it's up to good old JB to follow through. And so far it's been good stuff. And I expect things to get even better as the content picks up more and more in the weeks ahead. So yeah, definitely check it out if you haven't already, and let me know what you think as a subscriber, and also let Jeremy know what you think as well. He's very open to criticism and all that good stuff. And also, I am a paying member. I did not receive a comp subscription or anything like that. So I am just like you guys. So. Bunch of MMA going on this weekend. You can find previews all over the place, and it should be, you know, usual amount of fun. Bellator show. I still, as I mentioned, I don't understand why they're doing a title fight available on the streaming app and not on their service. That just seems really odd. I think they think it's odd too, but you know that it is what it is. And also UFC Greenville tonight, some good fights for the hardcores up and down the show, and I'll be watching, of course, as you will. And yeah, that's about it. So yeah, good weekend of fights. We're coming up on the big July show, International Fight Week, with return John Jones. What else we got? Nunes versus Holm. And I saw today that Sean O'Malley is off those shows off that weekend already due to some irregularities in his testing. Which, you know, that's a whole this testing thing, man. I don't know, crazy stuff. And You see, some guys get popped, have stuff in their system, they're allowed to fight, other ones don't. It's just really, really, really weird. But anyway, we'll get into that in the weeks ahead. So I'm going to let you go. Big thanks to you. Big thanks to Jeremy Botter. You have a ton of choice in your podcast day, and I greatly appreciate the time you spend with me or anyone else on our great website, WrestlingObserver.com. And we'll talk to you guys next week. This is Josh Nason, Josh Nason's Punch Out. Until next time, insert catchphrase here. Have a good weekend.